And a very warm welcome to everybody. This is Off the Hook Overtime. And we are now on YouTube, broadcasting over the internet. Kyle, I see you've made it safely.
Yeah, I'm just going to check that level.
Check whatever levels you need to check. While I greet Rob and Gila, who hopefully have made it in Skype land into overtime.
We have indeed.
We have indeed. We are here.
Good, okay.
And I hear us on YouTube. We don't sound bad.
Okay, that doesn't happen often, so that's good. And Alex is joining us now from Florida?
I am indeed here.
All right. Wow, that's remarkably smooth. Good conversation, good predictions. We'll see how many of them come true. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Just the conversation got me thinking of other things that went on. Virgil's case, for instance, mm-hmm. and the sort of parallels and distinctions between that story and other cryptocurrency NFT-related things.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
A lot of parallels.
I forgot about some of that.
Except that Virgil didn't steal billions of dollars from somebody. But there's that.
No, but it was, you know, what information and who knows things. I saw a lot of...
Well, it's the same hostility and suspicion
points.
That I think we're going to see come out of people who are smart, who know things and maybe don't know everything. But I think you're going to see a lot of that hostility coming out. And, you know, with good reason in this case, if billions of dollars are lost, not so much good reason in Virgil's case.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, when you look at the merits and the demerits of each individual case, you begin to see, wow, you know, in Virgil's case, you've got to remember that it was sliced. The government's case was sliced so thinly because remember they actually stipulated that everything that Virgil said while he was over in North Korea did not actually help the government of North Korea, that it didn't give them any knowledge that they didn't already have with respect to cryptocurrency, blockchain, money laundering, sanctions evasion, etc. However, there were individuals that were in the audience that may have learned something from what Virgil had said that they didn't know before, and that therefore that was some kind of transfer of knowledge.
That's the risk we take every week on the radio, that somebody might learn something that didn't know something before. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes it can happen.
I think it's also the space of, yes, people that are smart knowing things, and then what are we doing with that information? And I think that some of this is the, intersection or collision of national priorities, industry, what is the point of all of everything, and what we're doing in various parts of the world and national priorities with, you know, people who know things and move and live amongst those competing priorities and aren't really, thinking necessarily in the same terms. And having those discussions align in any way is where I think a lot of the disconnect has occurred with communities of smart individuals wanting to share and think the best of being networked and growing and pushing technology with the realities, the de facto world we're operating in.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say that people who want to share. I notice in our legal system, no offense, Alex, but I notice in our legal system, people who want to share are treated almost as harshly as people who want to steal. You know, because the people in charge, they don't want certain things shared. They don't want knowledge to be distributed amongst the masses. They want to maintain their control by maintaining that ignorance that they push onto everybody else, not telling them how particular systems or security works, not realizing that that is how you build better systems, by understanding how they work.
Down to our very government,
mm-hmm.
down to civics, like it's not clear enough.
Mm-hmm.
The functioning aspect of a republic and a democracy, a representative institution such as our own, and people not cherishing and having a complete understanding of the value of it and it in a healthy state, I don't think has been more pronounced than this year.
Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're really onto something here because hopefully, and maybe this could be considered another prediction of mine in 2023, but hopefully what we can do here on this program, on Off the Hook, as part of 2600 and the hacker community, is that I think we need to bridge the gap between the cryptocurrency world and the hacker world, or the world of cybersecurity professional things, because we are very much living in an interrelated system right now. That ecosystem of Web3, digital assets, cryptocurrency, et cetera, is all reliant on what we would ordinarily consider this Web2 type of infrastructure that requires security, that requires minds like ours in order to secure it, to keep terrible things from happening to a lot of these digital assets in the Web3 world. And, you know, I talked to Virgil quite a bit. We talk at least a couple of times a week. And when we do, this is something that he actually always brings up to me, which is that he hopes that we can begin to bridge that gap and to bring into the fold a lot of these people that we would otherwise consider to be outsiders. And there seems to be this weird animosity between the hacker subculture and what we would ordinarily consider, you know, crypto bros, you know, or just, you know, people that are, you know, looking to make a quick buck. But because there are some real legitimate technologists there, people trying to pick things apart, people trying to figure out how systems work and how to make them better. And those are the people that I think we do need to take into the fold of the hacker community, of our subculture, and try to nurture them. And I think there's a lot to be learned on both sides of the fence here. So hopefully that's something that we can begin to make happen a bit more frequently in 2023.
That's a good wish. Good wish for that period ahead. And we're going to need it. We're certainly going to need that kind of mentality. Hey, there was a story I wanted to get to. Didn't have time on the radio, but here we are in overtime. I'd like to just touch upon this before we open up the phone lines, which, by the way, we are not picking up the phone until we give out the phone number. In fact, we have the ringer turned off, so if anyone's calling, you're wasting your time because it's not even going to count.
We don't even know if it's going to work if we take your
call. What we're going to do is, when we give the phone number out, if anybody is calling at that time, we're going to cut them off so that everybody gets an equal shot.
I'm predicting a 70% chance of a high-pitched squeal.
That can happen. That can happen. But it's better than somebody, cutting the place in line and getting on.
Yeah, we won't get to that until the aforementioned
number. We will yank that phone cord out of the wall if we have to, just to maintain our integrity. Okay, speaking of maintaining integrity, this is not what's happening in New York City here. You might have heard about this story. Over the past month, multiple attorneys whose firms have litigation against the Madison Square Garden venue have said that Madison Square Garden has used facial recognition tech to find them and kick them out of shows. Yeah, and this is here's an example. I'm going to read you one example. Barbara Hart was celebrating her wedding anniversary, waiting for Brandi Carlile to take the stage at Madison Square Garden on October 22nd, when a pair of security guards approached her and her husband by their seats, asked for the couple to follow them. At first, she said to Rolling Stone that she was excited, thinking it was some kind of surprise before the concert started. Her excitement, though, turned to anxiety soon after, as she spoke with security and gathered that she'd been identified using facial recognition technology. They escorted her out of the venue.
She got a refund?
I imagine she must have gotten a refund. Now, she was initially confused, having no idea why she was flagged. She says security informed her that she was being ejected because of her job as an attorney at Grant & Eisenhoffer, a law firm currently litigating against Madison Square Garden's parent company in a Delaware class action suit involving several groups of shareholders. Now, Madison Square Garden Entertainment is owned by James Dolan. You might have heard that name. He's been known to kick out fans who anger him at various games of the teams he owns. Madison Square Garden Entertainment confirmed to Rolling Stone that it enacted a policy in recent months forbidding anyone in active litigation against the company from entry to the company's venues. Now, those venues include Madison Square Garden. They include Radio City Music Hall. They include the Beacon Theater. They include the Chicago Theater, which for some reason is in New York. The company's use of facial recognition tools itself dates back to at least 2018, when the New York Times first reported on it. Anyone who enters a venue is subject to scanning, but that practice now seems to coincide with the policy against opposing litigants. You know, this first of all, this particular attorney was not involved in the case. She worked for the firm, so apparently anybody who works for the firm is being kept out of a particular venue because the owner of that venue is being sued by lawyers who work for that firm. Alex, this doesn't seem fair, right? This is not how the legal world is supposed to work. I mean, you know, can you if you were suing New York City, could they keep you from coming to New York City? You know, it's the same logic.
I mean, yeah, this is really insane. I mean, it's really nutty. I mean, look, I want to, you know, the headline here is, I think this is an egregious misuse of facial recognition technology, you know, to gain some kind of almost just petty tactical advantage in litigation. The whole thing just seems really, really petty and childish. But it has really serious ramifications here. You know, and I want to play devil's advocate on the one hand here, too, because, you know, we have to acknowledge, just in the same way that we acknowledge Twitter is a private platform and it has its own First Amendment rights and it can kick off lunatics, you know, alt-right lunatics that are espousing, you know, hateful things or pushing out disinformation about vaccines. You know, a venue in this particular instance, a corporation, also has a First Amendment right to deny entry to certain persons and you know, so long as they don't do it in some kind of discriminatory fashion or, you know, on the basis of an immutable characteristic like, you
being
know,
a
race
lawyer.
Or gender. Yeah, that's right. Well, that is, some might say it's a genetic calling, but I would probably dispute that. But I think it's so on the one hand, I mean, look, they're a private entity. They can say, you know, we don't want you in here and you're out.
Yeah, but you know? Alex, who is you? I mean, in this particular case, it seems like anybody who's an employee of that company, that seems pretty discriminatory to me. Hey, look, if you go to the Metropolitan Opera, right, and you run on stage and you defecate on stage, I'm going to expect that the Metropolitan Opera will say, you know what, we don't want you coming here anymore. And that makes sense. There's a reason for it. But to say that because you work for the same company that somebody they are opposed to or fighting with, I mean, where does it end? Is it the families as well? It can just keep mushrooming.
Yeah, I do want to say I don't agree with what Madison Square Garden is doing at all, but there is an argument to be made that lawyers that are acting on behalf of an opposing litigant in a case are adverse to Madison Square Garden. If you do let them into your venue, they can begin to collect information that might be relevant to whatever the lawsuit is. However, I think you would have to, in order to do this in a way that makes sense, that where there's a rational basis for your exclusion of certain personnel, would be to say, okay, well, only lawyers that are working on this particular case at a particular law firm where issues of, let's say, premises liability or, like, let's say that, you know, it might have been a slip and fall case where the conditions of, you know, stairs in the auditorium are at issue, where there's some kind of physicality or some kind of evidence that could be gleaned from being inside that could give that litigant some advantage by having a lawyer inside the venue. You know, there'd be a reason then, I think, to keep out certain lawyers.
Why? But as a lawyer yourself, as a partner in a firm, I mean, on any given case, what firm would feel obliged to disclose who exactly down to the staff level is working on any particular case? I mean, I feel like that would be that's like a form of self-disclosure no firm would really agree to.
In a sense, that you wouldn't have to, right? Because the lawyers that are going to be working on a particular case, they're going to have their names on the pleading.
On
maybe
the docket.
Not all of them,
and,
though.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You're right, though, Kyle, because, you know, very often the names that you see on pleadings in a docket are going to be the names of the partners or the more senior people at the firm, as opposed to the younger associates, the younger lawyers that are working the day in and day out of the case. So you are right there.
I guess the reverse would be, okay, other, I guess, properties that perhaps an entity, a legal firm, might might have a jurisdiction over it. Like, no Madison Square Garden employees may become clients. You know, they set their own sort of private rules. And that goes to the sort of mushrooming you were talking about, how this just goes from one space to another until everybody's sort of paralyzed and can't go anywhere for all their different reasons.
Let me just bring up a hypothetical here. If I were to say right here that, I don't know, on February 14th, Billy Joel's going to be playing in Madison Square Garden. If this legal firm gives me a ticket to that show, I'll walk around and inspect all the staircases and bathrooms, whatever else you want me to look at, as long as I get to see the show. You know, what are they going to do about that? Are they going to take me saying this right now and get my face somehow? And if I try to go into Madison Square Garden on that day or any day, I'll be flagged. Where does it end?
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's why I think a lot of this isn't about protecting Madison Square Garden from lawyers collecting evidence or information about their venue. I think a lot of – because you could do exactly that. You could hire a private investigator to go in and start taking photos, you know, of the venue. That's what any good law firm would do. You're not going to send your lawyers out to go and collect evidence about Madison Square Garden. They're not really equipped to do that. You would want to send somebody who has that particular type of training, and you would want to send somebody in who could then testify as a witness in court about that. You never want to have lawyers testifying as witnesses. That's a very, very rookie mistake that you would not want to make. But
why is that a mistake?
Well, you want your lawyers to be advocates. You don't want them to be fact witnesses, because then their character could be impugned as well.
Okay.
Right? So if you have lawyers from your firm being put on the witness stand subject to cross-examination, it could taint the overall character of the law firm that's handling the particular case.
And just to be clear, I would prefer to see Bruce Springsteen on April 1st, just in case anybody is taking this seriously, much more than Billy Joel on Valentine's Day.
But, when we're talking about these things, we're joking in a sense, but I think what Madison Square Garden is doing possibly could be to try to discourage a lot of these larger law firms from taking up, from becoming opposing counsel. Because that means that every single lawyer in that firm is not going to be allowed to enter Madison Square Garden.
Exactly.
And the reason being is that, you look at, my firm is almost 700 lawyers. A lot of firms that, are even larger than that, right? And so, all of a sudden you have, 1,100 people in New York that can't go and access a concert venue with their kids, their wife, for pleasure. It's the venue in New York. I think it's the biggest concert venue in the city. So the flip side of this, too, is that it's very easy for Madison Square Garden or for anybody to begin to facial profile lawyers in particular. Because if you go to any law firm's website, they're going to have pictures of their attorneys. Every single lawyer generally has a picture on their website of their face along with biographical information.
Mm-hmm.
So you could very easily scrape that information, feed it into your facial recognition system, and deny access to every single lawyer who works at one particular law firm, probably within minutes.
Rob Dengila.
Okay, it's very important to note that this is not an isolated incident. This is a pattern of behavior now by MSG. There's a second story that came out not too long after the first one, where Radio City Music Hall, also owned by MSG and Dolan, kicked out a lawyer called Kelly Conlon, who was there with her daughter and her daughter's Girl Scout troop to see a show. And they removed her from the group she was with, removed her from her daughter, because she worked for a different firm that has something to do with a case against MSG. And so this is not a one-time misstep or weird decision. This is obviously what's being told to the employees of this organization to do. And a very good point that was brought up in one of the articles about all this was places like Radio City, Madison Square Garden, they're landmarks, they're public institutions. And what is the requirement of having a place like that and admitting the public? They're getting all sorts of tax breaks from the city, the state, whoever. They exist to bring in tourism, to be part of the whole New York City experience for people. Do they have a responsibility to let people in, even people they might not like? They have things like the liquor license requirements to worry about and things like that, which require, in the letter of the law, you have to admit the public. And so there's very interesting things going on with this, and I really want to see how this shakes out. I'm also very interested in the possible technical implications of, like, what if we all print these lawyers' faces on T-shirts and go see a show? Like, how is that going to jam the radar?
Wow.
That's a great idea.
The other thing that it brought up for me was the whole thing about, I think, Kyle, you were saying this also, about consolidation. And we're talking about the MSG network of venues. So we're talking about Madison Square Garden, all the venues at Madison Square Garden, Radio City Music Hall, the Beacon Theater, the Chicago Theater in Chicago.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it's in Chicago. It's not in New York. I made a misassumption.
They're opening a venue in Las Vegas in 2023. So we are now, it's reaching out across the world. And I'm also going to, not across the world, across the country, but bear with me. And also to say what the story that Rob was talking about, it wasn't just that this woman went to a show with her daughter's Girl Scout troop. She got kicked out of the Rockettes Christmas show in front of her child. So now we're talking about people who are traveling to come to these events that, I mean, I think they're from Connecticut, but just go with me here. And where the idea of all the consolidation, that all these venues are owned by the same people, and the same situation applies to all these, you know, and then where does it end, right? James Dolan also owns the Knicks, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is he going to start?
Is it the Knicks or the Nets? I'm not sure.
It's the Knicks. It's the Knicks. Jay-Z, okay. Owns the Nets.
All right.
Also, the Knicks play out of Madison Square Garden.
It's that, like, its own sort of dog food there. He's got a business working within a venue, but go ahead.
But here's my question. Is he going to start trying to compel the venues outside of his control? Is he going to say, oh, if the Knicks are playing somewhere else, are we going to apply these same rules to anybody who is in my sphere of influence in any way?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really excellent point. In what ways this is tangling up athletic teams in wholly distinct, separate business practices simply because, by virtue of that ownership allowance that the market has deemed acceptable, to what end is this audience going to be victimized by Mr. Dolan's entanglements and whims? That is a problem, that a team is captive to that and will become known kind of for that recourse possibly occurring, whether, yes, in that particular venue, or if they try to move with the team, God forbid, imposing that just because of his business practices and so forth. I really hope that if anywhere, if he shows his face somewhere, which I doubt there's any place else, you know, that other people control where he actually shows his face. But assuming there is a place where he does that, I really would be interested to see how he responds to being treated the same way. And I just feel like it's just an offshoot of that, that kind of control that maybe teams could say, hey, we're not really on board for this. Now, if they're owned by these guys, then again, this speaks to, like Gila saying, monopoly. Like, what is the problem? We can get into Ticketmaster too, you know? Like,
are you noticing a recurring theme where all of us are having our lives upended by temper tantrums of the very rich? Yeah, and the technology. I mean, look at the technology being abused in ways that, I guess, I didn't even predict this. I knew it was going to be abused, but wow, this is a level of infancy I was not expecting. Go ahead, Alex.
You know, I think you are 100% right there, Emmanuel. And I want to build off what Kyle was saying, which is, you know, how would Dolan himself respond to this type of discriminatory behavior? And I think that's the real danger here, too, though, is that there will be tit for tats. If the use of this technology goes on unchecked and unregulated, you know, for the foreseeable future, it's the inevitable consequence here that there will be tit for tat types of discrimination, and it's going to get out of hand really, really quickly because it will spiral into something utterly crazy and inane, because it will become a game for billionaires to be playing with each other and their lawyers and it's just ridiculous and foul, and it's a complete abuse of this type of technology. You know, and I think that there has to be local regulation of this thing. I think, you know, to wish for some kind of overarching federal law about facial recognition technology and its uses is really a pipe dream, because, you know, Congress just can't get its act together even to put together some overarching data privacy type bill. So, but, you know, at the local level,
even if they were threatened.
Yeah, well, you never know, right?
It's surprising how little they care when even their own are at risk.
That's true. That is true. But what is interesting, though, is, you know, at the local level, and even at the New York City level, there have actually been some really interesting laws that the city council have passed within in the past year, and in particular, regulating the use of artificial intelligence technologies in the use of automated employment decision making type of scenarios. And in fact, Emmanuel, I think there's even, you know, if I can give a little foreshadowing, there's even an article coming out in the next 2600 magazine about that particular local law and the regulation of artificial intelligence technology. And then I know the article kind of bleeds into some other issues. I won't give it all away.
I'm sworn to secrecy, so you won't get anything out of
it. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I was really impressed that the New York City Council actually did something, you know, that regulated technology in a somewhat rational way. I mean, they're still tweaking how it's going to work, and there's a lot of unanswered questions and things like that. And, you know, look, it's an interesting issue, and it makes work for lawyers, so, you know, I'm happy with that. But it goes to show you that this type of technology can be regulated by cities in a reasonable and a rational way that prevents this kind of misuse and this kind of spiraling abuse of the technology. So, you know, I would love to see the city council get off its butt and act before James Dolan creates the tit-for-tat situation that Kyle had described.
Well, you know, it seems like we've just leapfrogged over the whole debate as to whether or not it's a good idea to have your face scanned and identified when you walk into venues. That just seems to be normal now. And is there anything we can do about it?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say, but I feel like the horse has left the barn in a lot of ways, because of the overarching need for physical security of these venues. And, you know, we haven't said this word in a while, but, you know, in a post 9/11 world, I feel like with this technology being so readily available, it's going to be used for that type of purpose.
I would just say it hasn't – the reaction, I think, though – I mean, the implementation, the ubiquity is there now, but the reaction hasn't been really seen yet. And I do think there are things the horse is out of the stable, but it's not out of the corral, so to speak.
Is there any kind of rule concerning the list of names or faces they're keeping? Can people find out, am I on that list, or who is on that list? Can we analyze that and basically have that be made public, since they are basically targeting these people?
Yeah, I mean, arguably, some of these businesses, you know, businesses like Madison Square Garden and whatnot, because of their size, they would probably have to comply with state privacy laws like the CCPA. Now, I say probably because, you know, I would have to take a look at all of the facts and circumstances, and the CCPA, the California Consumer Privacy Act, and which would allow somebody, you know, who is a California resident to make a request to figure out whether or not their name was on their particular list and what type of data they were holding about an individual. But again, it's kind of scattershot in how privacy rights are distributed in this country, and it's done on a state-by-state basis. We don't have any overarching federal privacy law that would provide us that information upon request, you know, of a particular data owner or data controller like MSG. So, you know, right now in New York, I think it would be tough. I don't think there is a law on the books that would allow an individual to make that request, but a California resident probably could.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking, if you're going to travel to a different city and see some kind of show, wouldn't you like to know in advance, are you going to have trouble getting into this venue? there should be a way you can ask and say, hey, am I going to have trouble? And they should give you an answer. Otherwise, you know, you've wasted a lot of money and time.
Yeah. I mean, one could even argue that at the point of sale, if your name matches the name and other identifying criteria of a particular person who's on a blacklist, you shouldn't be. They shouldn't sell you the ticket.
Yeah, the transaction should be halted.
Right. Well, it's quite possible the person being targeted in this case was the guest of somebody else. So there's really, unless you want to identify everybody who comes into the place, it's going to be tough to cover that. Okay. Hey, I guess we should open up phone lines. Kyle, first make sure the phone is not ringing. So that we it's not ringing. Okay, so we're going to give out the phone number now. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK is our telephone number if anybody wants to call in and join the conversation.
First-time callers get priority.
Well, I don't know how. How do we do that?
I don't know.
We can't control who calls, but we prefer
first-time. You can tell by the ring.
We prefer, not that we have anything against our old-time callers, but our new callers, obviously, we should be encouraging new people as well. So if you've never called before, by all means, try calling now. 802-321-4225. The area code is in Vermont, but we're not. And I understand the phone is ringing, Kyle?
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of. Would you like me to answer now, or should I let it warm up?
Phone. It's probably
rebel,
but let's go. And you are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Is anybody there? Kyle, you put a piece of green tape on this when I can't move the level any higher. I guess that's a good level. Okay. You decided that's how loud I can go. All right. 802-321-4225.
It was a recommendation, but it hasn't been tested.
Well, it's more than a recommendation. It's a piece of tape. I can't get past it. It won't go. But I hear the phone ringing, so... Let's see who's there.
Be careful with that channel. Okay. I don't trust it. That's why I have it.
I don't trust any of the channels.
It's going to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
There. All right.
And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. I hear myself. I don't hear anybody else. Okay. You got to speak. That's maybe they're not hearing me. Is that possible? Okay. Kyle's nodding his head, meaning that. Okay, it seems we have a situation here where there's somebody on the phone, but they can't hear me because somebody changed something on the damn board. It worked last time. Okay, if this person is listening on...
Hello?
Yeah, okay, they hear me probably about 30 seconds after I say something, and they hung up again. What do you recommend, Kyle?
That sounded like Rebel.
Well, maybe, but regardless... Whoever it was couldn't hear us. Kyle's trying to figure this out right now. So while he's figuring that out, anybody else have anything they'd like to say?
Not successfully figuring it out.
Mm. Okay, you guys are a world of help here. What changed since the last time we used it?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Is there another radio show that comes in here and messes with the board? Because I want to have words with them.
No, there was a problem with feedback we'd experienced. So what I had done is try to alleviate some of that, and it does not appear to have had the effect that I would have liked it to have.
Mm.
So if you can be understanding, maybe we can take a call.
Well, how can I be understanding if it doesn't work? I mean, I understand it doesn't work.
Well, you're asking...
Uh-huh.
And seem confused.
For the benefit of the audience.
Yeah.
They haven't been
so
privy to this.
So is that clear?
As clear as almost anything else. So do we have a call?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think they can hear you.
Well, then what's the point of taking it? Is anybody there? Can you hear me? Yeah, they can't hear me. What's the point?
Hello?
Yeah, okay. That is Rebel, isn't it?
Hello?
Can we just give him the microphone without...
Hello?
Boy, this is great.
2022 has been a very rough year, hasn't it?
Well, it's a good that goes out this way, that's for sure. All right, well, we don't have to take calls, I guess. I feel bad, though, because, you know, we haven't taken calls in so long, and won't be here next week.
I have every confidence that we'll be able to, that Kyle will be able to fix this somehow.
What if one of you guys calls in, and you can basically just raise your hand when you hear us coming through the phone? That way... Would that help, Kyle? Would that Okay, he seems to indicate that it might help. So can one of you try calling? I must ask that nobody else call at this point in time. So, Kyle, you have to look at caller ID and make sure it's I believe Rob T. Firefly is calling in now. Is it ringing, Rob?
It is ringing.
Okay, it is ringing. Okay, and Kyle's going to pick it up. And, okay, so now you're connected. Can you say something into the phone, right? No, you're not connected.
That's still right. Ringing.
It's still ringing over
it's
here.
It's still ringing. I mean, somebody else was calling. Don't, please, people, don't call. We won't be able to take any calls. You're going to have to call back, Rob, because it's never going to reach us. That's the system. I'm sorry. That's how it works. So no calls at the moment because we're trying to figure out. This is live troubleshooting over the air. Just let us know when it starts ringing, Rob.
It's ringing.
Okay. Let's try this again. Okay. Did it pick up?
I believe it picked up.
Okay. And we have you on the phone and we have you over the air at the same time.
Kinky.
Now, you can't hear me over the phone.
I cannot hear you over the phone.
But you hear me over the radio. Okay. So we're going to continue doing the show. Don't you say anything, because when you do, well, unless you can mute your phone, that might be good if you have a mute button.
I can do that.
Okay, so mute your phone, that way you can participate in the show. When you start hearing us, if you start hearing us, just raise your hand, and then we'll know that Kyle has fixed the problem, which he always does at some point.
I will keep you posted.
All right, now we just need something to talk about. oh, you hear us. Wait. You can say you hear us. You don't have to just hold your thumb up. When did that happen? You hear us now?
Okay.
Just now.
Okay. I don't know why we're giving you a silent signal. Now you're not hearing. You see, if you had said, I hear you
there
now.
There it is. Yeah.
There it is. Okay. That's
okay,
good.
Yeah. The one quarter inch doesn't have to go, it shouldn't go all the way down. I think because it's stereo in a mono.
All right, let's log this for all time so that people can remind us what the problem is.
Auxiliary out 2 has to go halfway down. Because it's a mono cable.
Could all the listeners just write that down so that they can tell us if we forget in the future?
Auxiliary 1 and 3, which we're really only using 1, I think, because that's
left. I'm going to hang up on you guys.
Left and right.
That's nice, Rob. Thank you very much for that.
Auxiliary out 1 and 3 are for them on
that
machine. Mm-hmm. And then auxiliary 2 is what's going to the phone. And that was pressed all the way in, I think, in a... in a mono channel or a stereo channel, and it's mono or something. Whatever. That's good that it works.
Yeah, I guess it does work. In the end, it works. But mostly Kyle, you work hard to make this work.
I think I got the levels right, because I was reading them vertically. Those red, all that four rows of red, I was reading them vertically. They're set up horizontally.
I see.
So that's why we would get this squeal.
All right, I think we have a real phone call from a real listener.
Yeah.
And let's talk to them. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Oh, thank you. It's Jacob from Denmark.
Jacob from Denmark. Are you a new caller?
I'm a new caller, yeah.
All right. Well, this is exactly what we wanted. So thank you for calling.
Your number came across as a fraudulent, so... Can you confirm that you're fraudulent?
Wait, what's going on, Rob?
We cannot hear the caller.
You can't hear the caller. Wow. Yet another variable here. Okay, but you can hear me,
Kyle.
You
can hear me, Emmanuel.
I hear you. Wait,
I can hear
now
you.
I can't hear me.
There you are. They're good. Now I can hear the caller.
Yeah, but I can't. My microphone is cut out now. Wait. Okay, something happened with my level.
Testing 1, 2, 1, 2.
Can you hear me now, caller? See,
I can hear you now.
You can, okay. Rob, can you hear the caller?
I can hear the caller, yeah.
Okay, and caller, you heard Rob just now.
I heard Rob.
Okay, let us begin. We can actually have a conversation. How is Denmark?
Just be gentle.
Oh, Denmark is good. It's a little bit windy, but not that cold.
Uh-huh.
It's about 6 or 7 degrees centigrade here.
Okay, that's kind of warm for winter, but I don't know what's normal in Denmark.
Yeah. Oh, we go down to minus 20 degrees centigrade.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I kind of prefer that. I like it to be cold in the wintertime. I think that's appropriate.
Oh, yeah. And what happened good here in 2022 is that I finally got my house built.
Oh, wow. Okay. Congratulations.
I've been living in a camper trailer for 12 years saving up.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's awesome.
Did you design the place, and what was involved? the home you built?
Sorry?
Did you design it, or what was involved in that process of saving and planning this for so long?
I designed it. Actually, I started in 21, but I had to wait 10 months for the permit.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's actually, the roof system is made from a North American bracket system. It's a dome roof.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and now I finally got a place where I can invite a lot of people that I repair electronics, and it's a little bit of hacking, you know, fixing stuff and making it better and so on.
That's great. Wow. Brilliant. What was it like living in a trailer for 12 years?
It was okay. It was a little bit cold in the winter.
Uh-huh.
Waking up and need to get the wood fire going and so on.
Wow. Was it a problem finding a place for you to park your trailer?
No, actually, I live in an eco-village.
Okay.
Called the Freeland.
I think I've heard of it.
And, it's pretty known. It's alternative buildings.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's a straw bale house. The ground floor walls are compacted straw in a wooden frame.
Wow.
So, but it's half a meter thick, so it's pretty thick, 1.5 feet.
That's great.
But well insulated, so I'm happy to get into the house this Christmas.
Yeah, and making it really the interior a proper home for yourself, that itself will just moving in and getting comfortable, and you'll probably spend lots of time changing things and making it just right for you going forward. But that's so exciting, and I think a lot of people really they love that story, because the idea of raising a building yourself and having a place to call home like that, it's getting hard for people. It's rare. people renting so much. And finding...
Also, the material prices have gone up.
Finding ways to live in enclaves like that, it's important. So that's an interesting and incredible accomplishment.
It's good that I finally got space for people that come with the computers or amplifiers or whatever electronics they want to have repaired.
Uh-huh.
So... They come for a cup of tea, and we sit down and talk about it, and I find the cheap parts cheap online, and
Now, are you near Copenhagen?
I'm about 200 to 300 kilometers from Copenhagen.
Okay, so not very close at all, but.
No, it's on the other side of the country. It's Sealand, and I'm in Jutland.
Got it, okay.
Just at the nose.
Now, they have a hacker camp in Denmark. Have you been part of that?
No, sadly. I don't come around much. People mostly come to me with their electronics and so on.
I see, okay. So if you have broken electronics in Denmark, you're the guy to go to.
Well, yeah, I'm one of the guys. So I support the local area with fixing stuff and so on for cheap.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of like, it's sad that they kind of like, if something is broken, they just toss it out and go out and buy something new. It's way cheaper to repair. It costs a couple of dollars.
It's so important
of the time.
Yeah, the resources, the cost to put in energy to create a material like that, and then to just have it thrown it's great for the bottom line of a company, but the society that those products are put into suffer. People don't have the function that they're needing in their lives from whatever these things are, and we end up with more waste. And like you're saying, this cheap repair does a world of good for someone and extends the cost of those materials.
Oh, yeah. But we've got a good recycling center here nearby where people, they find stuff and they come by with it and so on. So it's you can, if you can recycle it, you can have it for free down there.
Very cool. Wow.
So that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been...
Yeah, and I want also...
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I also want to say thank you for your program. I've been listening for about 20, 25 years now.
Well, that was actually my question. I was going to ask how long have you been listening to Off the Hook. Wow, 25 years?
Yeah, it was one of my old friend, Def, that got me into it. He had some on a CD, some shows, and I found it online and so on. It was about in year 2000 or something like that.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So, and it's really good entertainment and also good information about different things and so on. And I liked listening to the podcast and so on.
Well, that's so great to hear. It really is.
It's a little bit late over here, so it's not every day that I stay up to 2 a.m. in the morning.
It's funny because, you know, we get a lot of calls from where it's really late. We get calls from Bulgaria, from the United Kingdom, Denmark. So it's really nice.
Yeah, a real treat when people do stay up and get in touch with us. So thanks so much for listening, and we love getting feedback, and keeps us going, keeps us interested and curious in what's on the horizon and figuring out what kind of crazy things are coming our way. So we love to hear that from people that appreciate us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we hope to make it over to Denmark again sometime soon. I've been there a few times.
Yeah, I'd love to go back.
Yeah, you're welcome to stop by.
And we'll bring some electronic equipment if it's broken.
Or components.
no problem. I probably got the spare parts.
What,
you got them.
Can you give us an example of something typical you might be fixing?
Oh, an amplifier or a plug for the power into a computer or maybe a hard drive. I got a little clean room where I can take it apart and put the discs over in another
transplant
chassis and so on.
Cool. Wow, that's good stuff. Just make a designated spot, and if someone needs it, you can get in there and do what they might not be able to do on their kitchen counter.
Yeah, it's small, precise work, but I've done a couple of them. So, but otherwise, just electronics that's broken or. Yeah, and we'll try to get the parts and regulators and whatever and cool. Try to help people out.
Wow. Now, what was your name again?
Jacob.
Jacob. Okay, Jacob, does anybody in Skype land have any questions for our call? Jacob, Alex, looks like you do.
Yeah, Jacob, thank you.
Sorry?
Thank you so much for the call. I'm wondering, given your line of work and your constant repairing of electronic equipment, do you have any thoughts on the right to repair, the right to essentially get under the hood and try to figure out and understand how these technologies work, like what we were talking about earlier and Kyle had brought up as one of his, I think, fondest stories and predictions for 2023?
I think everybody should have the right to repair. They should at least try themselves, and but do it safely. You know, it's electric, so there is some hazards to it. But third-party repair shops and so on, they should definitely be legal and kind of like free the schematics on it. And so on, make a large database so people, they can get the knowledge that they need to know to repair it properly.
I fully agree. Like, and just some system, some mechanism for, like, schematics, service repair, if you have people sign up, whatever you want to do to manage it, and build in that to the cost of the production of the stuff.
Yeah. Also, the EU have they kind of like, if you produce a product, I can't remember if it's all products and so on, this you also need to produce parts so it can be repaired.
Yeah.
there's been a law, I think it was 2021 or something like that, where it kind of like went into process. So you should be able to get the parts or the board units or whatever you needed, the components or so on, to repair different stuff that's sold in the EU.
Go ahead, Alex.
You know, if you would actually answer the question I was about to ask you, which is, you know, what are the local laws there with regard to the right to repair? And it does seem like there is some, at least minor obligation to furnish some of the components of a piece of equipment that would enable somebody to repair it, which I think is great. Is there any other legislation in Denmark that relates to the right to repair?
Well, not as far as I know. It's kind of like if you can fix it and it runs well and don't burn down your house, it's totally acceptable.
Fair enough. Yeah. Rob Gila, do you have anything?
Great,
go ahead, Alex.
Go ahead, Gila, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, you mentioned amplifiers. Do you make music, caller?
I make music, what?
Do you make music?
Sorry?
I think he's asking.
I done a long time ago on when I had an Amiga.
Oh wow!
But I got a couple of friends that makes music, sampling and so on. So I'm educated as an automatician mechanics engineer, and it was in the industry. It's mostly modular based, so if a module breaks and so on, you just toss it out and put in a new module. But I got the interest in repairing the modules and so on, but I've been mangling with electronics since I was about 12 or 13 years old.
Cool. Wow. Any words of advice for young hackers out there?
Oh, be safe, but definitely exploit the opportunities that is available.
Sounds good. Jacob, I want to thank you for calling us, and all the best to you over there in Denmark. Please call us again and keep us updated, and definitely would love to see you in Denmark sometime next time we're over there.
Thank you, and thank you for a great program, and remember to support WBAI.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You have a good night or good morning.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you too.
Bye. Wow. Thank you, Kyle, fixing the phone line so we could have that awesome call.
That was a great call.
That was a great call. Wow. And thank you, old callers, for letting a new caller get through. See how cool that can be when you get new voices?
Yep. And I just want to say, too, that I think my first prediction of this show has already come through because I had predicted, Kyle, I had said, you know, I have every faith that you will get this thing fixed.
Yeah, you did.
And you did it. So, you know,
right, yeah.
It is.
Was that a prediction for next year or for this year?
It was a prediction for this show.
Oh,
so,
okay.
We got to iron it out.
Because I didn't ask for predictions for the show. I asked for predictions for next year. Yeah. So maybe next time you'll follow the assignment.
I appreciate the vote of confidence.
Mm.
Yeah, so, you know, if that's any indication of all my other predictions.
I appreciate that the phone is ringing, and we need to pick it up and see who else is out there. Maybe it'll be another new caller, maybe be an old caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. You're at the Dial Tone. How nice.
Our old friend, the Dial Tone.
The Dial Tone just won't let us alone, will it? Phones, what will we do without them? Well, we got another call back quickly. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, I'm here, Emmanuel.
Okay, it's an old caller. This is Rebel calling us for about the 1,050th time.
Of course, because I've been listening for like over 25 years.
Someone needs to add up all your phone calls, see how many calls you actually have made. That would be interesting.
I don't know.
Well,
anyway,
tell us what's new while we sit back and just relax.
Let's see. What's new? Let me go to the notes. Let's see. Okay. When you call a number, well, I could three-way to this number. I'll tell you what it goes. It doesn't tell you what you called, and when you press 2, this poor company, listen to what this poor company has to do on their voicemail because, you know, scammers are like calling people with this company's phone number. Hold on. Wait a minute. Let me just See if I could do this. All right, you want to hold? Hold on. Can add a call.
This live holding action.
Holding.
I'm just relaxing.
Calling. Schedule a new
service
or appointment.
Okay, Emmanuel, you there?
Press 1.
We're here, but we're trying to relax.
Call from number. Thank you for calling. Hello. We apologize that you are receiving these calls, but they are not originating from our office. Please either block this number or place it on the do not call list while we resolve this with our carrier company. Sorry for the inconvenience.
See what that tour company has to do to you know, because scammers are using that company.
Due to telephone company facility trouble in the area you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
What's the big deal, Rebel? What's going on here?
No.
That
tour company.
Weird recording you're playing.
You call somebody.
Your party is not answering.
Yeah, all right.
Please try your call later.
All right.
We're sorry, but your call will
connect.
Now be disconnected.
Okay, you could disconnect because so long as the manual's not disconnected.
I don't know what's going on. The operator just keeps barging in here, saying all kinds of nonsense.
That's the AT&T recording. You might have recognized
the
that.
The toll-free number you have dialed has been disconnected. No further information is available about this number. 074T.
Okay, now, then people...
Your call did not go through. Please try your call. All circuits at the location you are calling are
All right, let's call another number.
Due to emergency in the area you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
Okay, hold on. Hold on.
What's going on here? I'm so confused.
This is going to turn into a Negative Land song. Like,
at some point, like, it already is. I'm probably recording it as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Nine to continue.
Okay, press 9 to get 9. Are you there?
Unfortunately,
press
I am.
Press 9 to continue.
9. Oh, wait.
I pressed
this
9.
This call may be recorded.
What did I call, though?
I don't know, but you better not record me. I don't consent to this.
No, I'm not recording it. I'm three-waying you.
If I find out you recorded this, there'll be hell to pay. Hell.
Don't you record all the shows anyway?
That's not the point.
Okay, by the way, this is a 9901 number.
Oral Audiology Clinic. Our hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday.
Why, in the name of heaven, Rebel, are we calling a clinic?
Okay, now that's 718-something-9901.
Is your point that 9901 is sometimes not used by the phone company? Because we know that. And, in fact, we've talked about that before.
And now Frontier Airlines does not have phone customer service anymore.
No airline does. They all suck.
No, they do. I mean, they have, but Frontier Airlines doesn't have. They say, I heard this on a news story. Please text us or go to our website. Now you got to text them or go to their website.
Yeah, they don't want to talk to you because their customers are always hostile towards them, you know? So they don't want to have those hostile conversations, so they don't speak to any customers anymore, and hopefully they won't have any soon.
You know, I wish Bernie S. was here because I'm thinking about going to, like, Citizens Band Radio, like, you know, like, handheld radios.
I don't think anything's stopping you from doing that.
Right, but I'm just wondering, you know, like, how things work and, like, you know, what's the best one to get and things like that.
Yeah, but get a
Fisher-Price.
No, because they only have a quarter-mile range. Remember the Radio Shack ones?
Get him a good radio. You know?
Harris.
A Cobra.
Harris?
Yeah, you want a Harris.
What about FM radio? You know, what is this FM is going on CB?
FM is going on CB?
Yeah, that's CB radio is on AM mode.
You're telling me that we're going to hear truckers in full stereo sound with high fidelity?
No, I mean, it's not the definition, but it's to prevent interference. Like when you go under an overpass on, AM, yeah, like you sometimes you would be listening to an AM station and you go under an overpass, it would like fade out until you cross, not under the overpass.
Right.
FM does not do that.
That's true. But
that's probably why.
I don't know if that's really a major issue on CB.
Well, I mean, like, I guess to so that interference from, like, you know, like buildings and like the hills and stuff, maybe that's why they did it.
It's possible.
You are returning a call to a prepaid calling service system, and the party that called you cannot be reached at this number. You are returning a call to a prepaid calling service system.
No, I'm not.
And the party that called you cannot be reached at this number.
It's off the hook on CB.
Okay, let me call one. Would you like me to call one and collect?
You can't broadcast a radio show on CB.
That's what you think.
No. That's it's not for that. No, it's just the frequency.
Just holding the button that long, your thumb would turn blue.
In your limited view of the world. Yeah.
Some people do it, actually. I've heard, some people.
You just get thousands of truckers to hold the button for an hour once a week. What's the problem with that?
Rebel, this has been fun. Is there anything else you'd like to conclude with?
Yeah, I miss payphones. You were talking about payphones, and that payphone's still there at the Rockefeller Center subway station.
So we keep hearing.
And when I call, and operators are still there. I went to a phone that I know that, is a Verizon phone, it's a business line. And it's a regular, single line phone. It's not like the PBX or anything. And I dialed 411 and I got information. I mean, it says, local and national 411, which city. And I just pressed zero and then I got a real person.
Well, here's an assignment for you, Rebel. Next show that we do in 2 weeks, how about you call us from that payphone? In fact, we'll give you the toll-free number.
I think I'll be in California then, or Florida, or something like that.
That's really inconsiderate. Okay, well then, how about the week after that?
The week after that, maybe. But I'm going to the 2600 meeting in Arizona next week.
Well, not on a Wednesday night, you're not. It'd be awfully early.
On a Friday.
Well, right. We're asking to call on a Wednesday. And there's no place to have 2600 meetings on a Wednesday.
Yeah, but he's got to travel. I mean, that takes time.
That's his concern.
Right.
Right.
He's letting us know that he can't make it to call in on the show.
Not this Friday, a week from Friday, because not this Friday is the 26th. No, wait a minute. Yes.
I don't care about Friday. We're talking about Wednesdays.
He'll fit us in when he can.
Well, that's what I'm asking him to do.
And at the end of the month, then I'll,
You know, Rebel, you keep up with this attitude. There's not going to be a payphone left. They're being purged, in case you haven't heard.
They were talking about payphones. They were saying about the city payphones and municipal. Those are not. Remember when payphones were run by, like, 9X and Verizon and all that?
Yes, the phone company.
Yeah,
I remember
then
that.
It became, like, Polkot. Like, the Verizon got out of the payphone business, mm-hmm. and, then it, sold it to the private companies.
Right. We're all living in the same world. We all know these things. Yes, we've witnessed this. We've commented on it for years now. But there is a payphone still at Rockefeller Center in the subway station, I believe, and hopefully we can use it sometime.
It still works. You could call, but you cannot dial one like at the regular phone that I was mentioning. You could dial 10 whatever NYT whatever and get the operator, like Verizon operator.
Mm-hmm.
The payphone you cannot. I think if you call from a payphone to the operator now, it just won't go through because operators just do. They don't really do anything. I said, can I have the rates of calling, 212 or 516 or whatever? They said, you have to call the business office. Remember when the operator used to give you the rates of, calls?
Yeah, rate and route operator, I believe is what they were called. And
that's TFTS operator. How did that work? Rate and route?
It was just one of many many departments inside the phone company. You would get a kick out of this. On YouTube, you can find all these old films that were made by the phone company from the 1940s, the 1950s.
I've seen them.
It's incredible. And listeners, you really should just go to YouTube and explore and find old phone company films. They're amazing.
Yeah, the Bell System Archives has a great channel.
Yeah, Bell System Archives, yep. AT&T Tech Channel.
It's just me or they a monopoly again, and we're just not customers. They're their customers are all, like, industry people, but, like, they're definitely a monopoly again.
Yeah, I don't know what they do.
Like, divestiture happened. They got rid of all the businesses that have people as customers, became a monopoly again, and then just made a bunch of ISPs customers? How's that work?
All I know is they took one company and broke it into, what, six, seven pieces?
Oh, they make local telephone companies customers.
And they all turned into corporate giants.
Yeah, and now they're all owned by one big company again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just checking. Just want to make sure
I remember.
I had that right.
Rebel, this has been fun. We must do it again.
Well, I remember, I was just going to mention one last thing. I remember when I was like a kid, like, you know, like in the 70s, I used to dial zero. I used to call the operator and ask her for rates or for something like that. And I remember a recording that the operator would call into that said, rate step 1-1 or repeat.
Yeah,
or
it was like a computerized voice. If you listen to some of our really, really old shows from the early 80s, you'll hear a couple of recordings where that's captured.
You know, it's a rate step. And then also, how did that work? Is that just like a thing where they tell her where to look on her, that multi-leaf folder thing?
You know, I'm not an operator. I wouldn't know the answer to that. Only an operator would. And I'm sure there are some operators right now who are gripping the arms of their rocking chairs as they hear your voice and recognize you from the 1970s when you used to torment them. And they can answer that question.
Well, I know another story. My phone number used to begin with a 9, like at the end. It would be 9567. But the phone number for the pay phones used to begin with 9, like 9872-9626. So I remember back in the 70s when I would call collect to home, the operator would have to call this computer and say, a coin, repeat coin, or valid, repeat. Because that was before, you know, the top system where it's a terminal and they know right away whether it's a coin phone or not.
Interesting, yes. These are all true facts and worth remembering. But, Rebel, we're going to move on now because we're going to try for one more phone call. So thank you for calling us. Good hearing from you. Enjoy wherever you travel to and hope to hear from you from a payphone someday.
It's so easier to call from cell phone, you know, instead of standing on the cold on the payphone and, you know, and then worrying about, quick, 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 please deposit 5 cents. 5 cents.
As Rebel fades off into the distance, thank you for calling. Let's give out the phone number. It's 802-321-4225 if we have one last call to take, because we're getting tired. We've been at this for quite some time now. This is off the hook overtime, and nobody has anything to say, apparently.
Well,
yes, Rob,
while we're waiting, I'll just say it's been quite a year, and you know, I think all of us here at Off the Hook at WBAI at Pacifica, we're grateful for all of you out there who continue to welcome us into your homes and your ears, and keep allowing us to do what we do by going to WBAI, givetowbai.org, and doing what you can to help us keep going.
It's kind of cool that our voices are transmitted from 4 Times Square throughout the whole New York metropolitan area while we do our radio show, and then right after that, our voices get transmitted over all kinds of other communication pathways, I guess. Fiber and copper, maybe, and through the air.
Microwave.
Yeah.
5G, 6G.
I hear the phone ringing.
Yeah, you want that?
Yeah, why not? Let's do one more call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Hello, you there?
Hi.
Hey, what's going on? Who's this?
Hey, this is Johnny Fusion.
Hey, Johnny Fusion. How you doing?
Good. I'm actually a writer for the magazine. I've had 4 articles put in.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. Wow.
And I'm a first-time caller.
Uh-huh. And where are you calling from?
From the Bay Area in California.
Awesome. Wow. We're pretty much covering the globe tonight. We're trying to bring you up because you're kind of low. If you can get closer to the phone, that would be helpful.
Sure, I can get closer to the phone.
Okay, great. Are you a long-time listener?
I am, for a couple years.
Uh-huh.
A couple years, yeah. But mostly a reader of the magazine for, like, 20 years or so.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Tell us something about your articles.
Well, my first article was like 10 years ago about hacking alt detection in Second Life. And then I did 3 articles this past year.
Mm-hmm.
I did, 2 were opinion pieces. One was called, something like, I thought the cyberpunk dystopia would be a hacker paradise. I failed to heed the cautionary tale.
Uh-huh.
You know, because cyberpunk is kind of hip again. And, and we're kind of living in the cyberpunk dystopia, and it really sucks.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely.
And then one I'm kind of embarrassed about, I kind of ranted about TikTok hacktivism.
Oh, we need more rants like that. We need people to rant as much as possible about these things.
Yeah, because this is when Epic posted that abortion bounty website the other year, when Texas put that horrible anti-abortion legislation through.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some real hacktivism going on, but then some kid for the likes or something talked about it on TikTok, and you know they saw that and they just made it impossible for anyone else to do any work.
Uh huh. So instead of doing a well-intentioned action wound up causing something bad to happen.
Right, because they wanted bragging rights mm-hmm. instead of actually getting the work done.
Yeah, that's a common theme in our community is, people who jump the gun and try to get bragging rights and wind up making things worse. It does happen too often.
Yeah, and so the last article was in the summer issue, and I actually wrote it last year, like September, November. And then I had a lung transplant.
Oh my God! Whoa, that's
and then I actually got the acceptance email while I was in the ICU recovering from the lung transplant.
Wow, I'm amazed you got email in the ICU.
Well, I had my phone, you know, but I was kind of out of it and loopy on the drugs because I was on heavy pain medication and stuff, but.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah, and that one was on Dark Matter and Project Raven, which was the most unethical hacking I've ever come across. This was this outfit in the United Arab Emirates where they were pwning iPhones with no-click iMessage messages and, you know, they had basically Americans who worked for the NSA through contractors like Booz Allen, right? They get recruited by this outfit called Dark Matter, and they get shipped over to the UAE to work for their state equivalent of the NSA. And they set up, like, the surveillance state on steroids. And because of their hacking, dissidents and journalists are disappeared off the street. They're tortured. They're tried in secret. You know, and, it's like I've been in the hacking scene since the late 80s. And most of it is just like curiosity. Can I do this? You know, this is a fun technical hack. But this put real people's lives in hell, right? People were hurt, you know, because of hacking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed some of your writing about and a lot of these different topics, but that in particular, the concept that zero days and malware and various forms of software are and exploits essentially are not fixed, but rather sold to the highest bidder and used in essentially military operations, and that is what we're talking about when we're talking about the militarization of the internet and you know, what the treatment of this network as you know, for the social good, only as an afterthought to its militarized aspects, and you know, the fantasy that it is this this utopia of just protocols that have no allegiance or and so forth is just that, is a bygone fantasy. We need to really appreciate what the environment of this network is, how it's used, how it's exploited for private interests, and that the actors using this network alongside industry and commercial interests are very much interested in military ends. And this goes for every nation in the world. They all have information operation arms like you're describing, you know, NSA equivalents on up through military now. And the idea that hackers can have day jobs where they're just doing a small part of something and don't really have a say in this, it's a lot less debatable these days. And I think people need to stop kidding themselves around these issues, and I think that's what you're pointing out. But, you know,
yeah,
I
made the argument about the ethics around, like, what you're doing for a payday. You know, because UAA recruited these hackers, you know, who formerly worked for the NSA through contractors and stuff, you know, because it was a big payday, no taxes in the UAE, you know, and the American whistleblower only caught her scruples when they started going after American targets. It was, she thought she was a good spy as long as it was against brown people, right?
Wow.
But
okay.
as soon as it was, oh, we're doing this to Americans too. Oh, I guess I'll finally get a spine and sit and, oh, maybe I'm a baddie. You know, like there's such a thing as a good spook. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think our coziness with people, like, if you, after a while, are involved in, you know, computers and telephony and that world, like, you inevitably hear stories and bump into people that are involved in this stuff or cagey about it, you know, and that right there is your first clue that you should probably, you know, just at least appreciate who you're talking to and why they are the way they are and what motives, what things might be at play. And this extends to, like, our discussion of law in the past, like, 10 years. It's been a factor in all of this. But you're right in that, like, you, especially to young people getting involved, I know it's hard to find employment. I know you want to be, you know, testing systems and doing all this stuff, but just appreciate who you're doing that for. And if you enlist and do it somewhere, be a little bit more informed about what that entails and what kinds of things you'll be tasked with doing. There are people right now living with PTSD from their involvement in past conflicts where some of this stuff was tried out for the first time and we didn't really know what the consequences on people operating autonomous systems and having access to interconnected systems and so forth. So anyway, I just the awareness and this like unease of proximity of communities, because in a lot of like hacker events, there have been sort of issues with national security and intelligence community stuff. And then there's also been this like coziness and it's always been a gray, like back and forth, and it's, becoming ever more poignant to appreciate the interplay of all of that, I think. Go on. I'm just building on what you're saying, but please continue.
Yeah, because, like, Dark Matter, the company that had these Americans work for the Emirati government recruited at hacker conventions. They were at Black Hat. If you went to Black Hat, you might have gotten some Dark Matter swag. You know?
Yep, and
very true. You know, and it's a game at DEF CON to spot the Fed, right?
That's an interesting thing to talk about. Just like the things that 10 years ago were like a joke and sort of funny, I don't think are as funny now, especially at conferences, and the way we treat one another and the prejudices we bring to a lot of these events around one another. It is, meeting in person is still awkward for hackers. And with some of these things, top loading some of those interactions, it can be contentious. And yes, our playfulness and our footsie with agencies that definitely want to recruit, like, should they not be allowed to recruit? Like, I don't agree that all of the defense capabilities and all the private entities in the U.S. just shouldn't be able to recruit hackers. I don't agree with that, and I think a lot of people want to be able to work wherever the hell they want to work. But these get to broader questions, and this is part of, I think, what we're looking at in a bigger sense. Like, what is the point of Western society? We're internalizing a lot of these philosophical things and to come back with some confidence about the questions other parts of the world has about these systems. So, you know, should we have employed hackers? Well, I think, and a lot of my sort of willingness around that to tolerate people being able to work wherever the hell they want is that I don't think unemployed hackers are very good for networks either. You know, people then get desperate. They try to, you know, make a quick buck, make ends meet, and then you don't end up with better, stronger networks if you can't get a job. I know that. I don't kid myself one minute how hard it is out there, especially if education and other things, you know, were sort of stacked up against you, the competitiveness of, you know, where monopolies can get talent and how they can how much power they can bring to universities or, you know, wherever the talent is. But at the same time, we need to be, critical. Like, I think hearing stories about what some of these places do is the best way to have people informed. Like, that's the only way. Like, if people are going to be in a place that people are going to be recruiting for private entities that are involved in violence, they should have as much information about that and the willingness to let them make it seem like it's just another tech company where everybody's on, like, you know, bouncy balls and has all sorts of, you know, whimsical perks. That's not what the reality is, even at a lot of these tech companies that attracted a lot of talent and had a huge boom in acceptance to get people to stare at iPhones. You know, they had to have a reason for people to use 4G networks, so let's give them something to do with it, right? So that's what that technology was sold as. And so, like, what 6G, what the next stuff, which monopoly is going to victimize us with that technology next, and which of you will be recruited to either do that commercially or take the job that you can't talk about and won't admit to among your hacker friends, because if it's transparent, they're going to judge you for it. I think those are very real aspects of industry and the kind of world we're stepping into. So I'm really appreciative of your writing, and those are my reactions. I don't know if that helps with perspective.
Thank you very much. It's humbling, to get that feedback, especially from people, involved with the home organization, so to speak, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like writing out into the void. You know, I get a little bit of feedback on the Discord, on the 2600 Discord server, which I recently joined and stuff, but, you know, it's hard. You know, it's like, unless someone writes a letter into the magazine, mm-hmm. you know, I really don't know how well it was received.
Yeah, it's you know, feedback is a tricky thing. You never really know how many people are out there. It's like the radio, you know, because we heard from a guy in Denmark tonight. We had no idea we were getting out there. We always are hearing from people. It's kind of the magic of both publishing and broadcasting is you don't really know how many people are out there. But let me just ask you, is there something you could say to people out there who maybe are considering writing something and aren't sure if it's a good idea? Any advice you can offer them?
Just write and submit, you know. I haven't had anything rejected yet.
Okay.
You know.
That's good.
So, you know, and be patient because, you know, it's only a quarterly magazine, and sometimes that acceptance letter takes a long time to get in, and the publishing cycle is slow because it's every 3 months.
True.
You know, so it takes a long time to see your story in print. But it's like that Gretzky quote, you know, you miss all the shots you don't take.
Very
right?
true.
And if you
Very
have,
true.
And if you have something to say, you know, 2600 is a good forum to say it for the hacker community, I think. It's one of the most old. I think it's one of the oldest and best established magazines. You can buy it in Barnes & Noble. You know, we're on Amazon or...
Well, there's a story about Amazon we're not going to get to tonight, but when you deal with big companies, sometimes you don't have any control over what they do. But that's you know, par for the course. It's what we talk about all the time. But what your point is very well taken. Basically, you're so much better off having written something than not having written something, even if it doesn't get published. At least you have written something. And that's what we try to impart to people who are out there. And, you know, the thing with the magazine is it's permanent. It's always out there. It's printed. It's something that people will come back to in 20, 30 years, and you know, it'll still read just as well as it did the day it came out. You don't get that as much with bulletin boards or news groups or social media. It's very hard to find things from particular times or covering particular topics. So there's something magical about both radio and publishing, which I think many, many people get.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have it in hard copy and print, you know. Like, Frack is just as old, but, mm-hmm. you know, it lives on hard drives and floppy disks and websites. You know, it's kind of more ephemeral, so to speak.
It's magic. Frack is magic. It's definitely something that has lived through the ages, and I think it's an exception because they have, you know, they have a volume numbers, and you know if you're missing one. Whereas,
yeah.
you know, people just posting on Reddit or something like that, you know, it's not the same thing. You know, things will disappear, and you'll never find them again. Or Facebook. You know, I look for things on Facebook all the time, you know, whenever I sign on, and I can't find them. I can never find something that somebody said or a contact that I want to make. Whereas, you know...
Or it can be removed or moderated.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or a billionaire can buy the platform and it can all go to hell.
Uh-huh. You have a copy of the magazine, that's yours, and, you know, it's up to you to take care of it.
And yeah, I got back issues going back decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been. We're hitting our 40th year next year. Can you believe that? That's unbelievable.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I've been reading since the 90s, so actually more like 30 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, listen, it's been great hearing from you, and please continue to write, and I hope other people are inspired by this, and they write as well, because that is really... The magic of the whole operation is you know, the voice. You know, that's in the very early days, in the mid-80s, that's what inspired the magazine, was the stories that were being told on bulletin boards but not being shared outside of that small community. And putting something on paper made it so much bigger, And I dare say it grew exponentially for quite a while after that, and it certainly proved that people want to hear these stories.
Yeah, I love writing for the magazine, and I plan on continue doing it.
Okay.
I've just gotten in my recovery where I can write again. I just wrote an essay on Medium.
Wow.
About the AI art moral panic.
Uh-huh.
And so I was thinking about maybe doing something about that for the magazine from, because people have been so used, all they've seen in the tech is surveillance capitalism for like 20 years now, that they forgot that technology can be liberating, that it can make things more accessible, you know? Like, the hacker ethic is all but forgotten by most people, and all they see of technology is oppression and trying to sell you stuff and track your data. And they don't know about the free software movement or open source or Libre software and how it can be so empowering. And AI has this potential to be that, but people are scared because it's a disruptive technology.
Yeah, and it's so true. Like, until it's commodified and sold back as something flashy, people won't accept it. But really, it's a capability that's just emerging, and it can, like you're saying, take all forms. And I don't want to be so deterministic about what the network has become in my predictions, because you're right, the ethos and the spirit of, like, technology having a liberating capability is... it's still there. It's just not, it's formless. Like, it's not a brand that the sort of Gen Z, like, people who've known nothing else can access. And they need to realize the network is there for them to define. And I think all people need to realize that these collection of companies are just innovating in certain areas of it, but the network still exists, and we can design things around it. And mostly the power is in ways that firms do not function. Like, they all throw their weight around and think they're a big deal sort of in the face of victimizing their audience or their public, until the public shows the scale with which they can throw their weight around. That's a market force. So don't let the monopolies scare you too much, because they are much more vulnerable than they would have you think. They're designed to just compete with one another on the terms that they compete against one another, if there is anybody else. And the modes,
yeah,
the other modes they exploit in politics and elsewhere, the public has just as much access to those avenues. So, yeah, it's not a sort of a preordained thing, and we should get back to that. What are the tools? What are the things we haven't thought of that could be prototyped with free software? And what kinds of, like, even with social media, we're seeing, what does it look like to graft onto, you know, decentralized networks and transform all of that? And please keep reminding us, because your stories are,
yeah,
are apt. So that's just a great direction that you're going in.
Yeah, I'm no longer black hat or white hat. I'm old hat.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
That's the best hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And about the whole thing, you know, capitalism ruins everything it touches. And unfortunately, it touches everything.
Well, that's sounds negative, but it's probably true.
Yeah. The best way to prevent that from seeping in is to design everything else around other modes that don't necessarily have the same vulnerabilities. Fill in the gaps, so to speak, with stuff that is not designed the same, structured in the same way.
Hey, we got to go. Yep. We just realized we've been on for an hour and a half just on overtime alone. So,
okay. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for calling.
Good talking with you.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for writing, and best of luck with your recovery. And hope to see many more articles from you.
I'll get to writing.
Okay. All right. Be well.
Bye.
Wow. We had good calls tonight, huh? That was really something.
Yeah. Good way to end the year.
It is the end of the year. Our last show, our last overtime for 2022. And the first one won't be for another couple of weeks for 2023.
Well, so Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year. And I guess that's
it. Let's have a better one.
Yeah. I was trying to think of that holiday in Switzerland with the kings. Have you... That are in the cake and Two Kings Day, Three Kings Day, or something like that?
Three Kings Day?
Three Kings Day. Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think, the second, right? It's around there somewhere. But anyway, whatever holiday you're having, have a happy one. Write to us, OTH@2600.com. Off the Hook will be back in 2 weeks, 7 p.m. on WBAI, also broadcast over the net, and, of course, overtime at 8 p.m. on Channel 2600 over on YouTube. Good night, everyone.
Bye.